Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fozcast. We have got a little bit of a different episode for you today because we are doing a Q&A session. We put a post out on Instagram this morning asking you lovely people to get in touch in your droves. Ask those lingering questions, the ones that you don't know, the inner workings of a football club. How does this happen? What happens when that happens? What do you do when... And we have got Paul Robinson, ex-West Brom, Birmingham City, Watford, Bolton. He's made nearly 800 career appearances.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
What a guy, by the way. We've done a football filling episode this morning. It was honestly world class. Robbo, it was world class. So thank you for joining us. You're not actually fully retired, though, at this moment in time, are you? Because we heard, didn't we, Tom, that...
We heard a little swing on the grapevine, didn't we?
What did we hear?
That Paul Robinson's back playing football again.
He's back playing football again. He's playing Saturday morning football.
And can we say old habits die hard?
No, without doubt. He's Paul Robinson, mate. When that red mist comes over, the red mist comes over. So talk us through it. You're playing on a Saturday afternoon. Who is it for?
Yeah, so it's for my local village, Claverden, because it's a team my son plays for. Uh-huh. So the great joy of actually playing in the same side as my son was a great life experience.
That's nice.
Good result of the weekend, 4-0 in the cup game.
Clean sheet.
Yeah, got a yellow card, first one.
Who did you play against?
We played against Midland Lions.
Love that.
Yeah, away at the Walsall 3G, the back past the West Brom training ground. Yeah,
so. Talk to me about 3G. What's that like on the body on Sunday morning when you wake up?
Can be painful, mainly Monday.
Yeah?
That 24 hours was like not too bad, but then the 48 hours, it starts kicking in.
What about like burns? Do you get any of those little like slidey burns or anything?
Yeah, only if you go in for crazy tackles, which I don't anymore.
You sure? Yeah. I heard somebody told me that you might have picked up a yellow card late on.
I did. That was more tiredness and wanting to keep a clean sheet.
Talk me through the yellow card. Was it a worthy yellow card or what?
You could say it was, yeah. It stopped a counter-attacking threat that they give, yeah. But I think the funniest thing about it was that this is amateur football at its greatest. Is you get a couple of supporters every now and then watching the games and they sort of just can be vocal every now and then.
It's Paul Robinson.
When did you retire quickly, Paul?
2018-19.
Okay. And you're 45?
45 now, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Quite a good old career, mate.
The first time, obviously, since I've left Millwall that I wanted to get back involved in playing football and how would my body cope with it. And I feel great. I actually feel really good, and it keeps my mind active as well, which is even better for me.
And you put a dirty tackle in. And
it wasn't a dirty one. It was just a lazy, late, like, just sort of, oh, I'm too tired with this now. You're running at me. So let's just finish it there. I took a yellow card for the team. And then all of a sudden, I've got this... Just one geezer's just standing, and it makes me laugh every time now. I just remember it. He just put his arm, Robbo, Robbo, we loved you at the Albion, Robbo. And I was like, oh my God, is this what my Saturday's all
Can
about?
Can you imagine how surreal that must be, though, for like an ex-West Brom player, and then you've got a West Brom fan on the sideline watching one of his heroes from back in the day absolutely end somebody, nail somebody in the 90th minute, picking up a old habits,
old habits die hard.
Basically, everybody knew he was going to get a yellow card, and there he is. But it's nice to see you back, mate, and we're looking forward to this one today because you're going to help me lift the lid on all of these sort of all of the questions that we've got in. First of all, I'm going to start with one, if that's okay, lads, please, because I got a question sent to me from text message this morning that's from a guy called Steve Thompson. Do you know a guy called Steve Thompson?
Steve Thompson, I know very well.
Steve Thompson is the manager of Norton Lindsay under 15s, who my son and your son play for. Mm. Robbo is also kind of the assistant manager, is it fair to say?
Helping out. Helping Tom out.
The coach, the assistant manager, the help out. He's a good guy to have on the sidelines, basically. You get into the referee's ear a little bit, don't you? And anyway, Steve, after an incredible 4-2 win yesterday against top of the league team, sent a question in that said, Robbo, did Tomo, which is Steve, did he make the subs too early yesterday and did that nearly cost us the game?
No, he didn't make the subs too early because I think in grassroots football, you've got to give all the boys a chance.
Love that.
So the rotation of the teams are important, that every kid's getting their minutes. And it's just the character in the game. It's just the way the game changes, unfortunately. In football, it's you could be winning one minute and then the next minute you could be level, which we were. We ended up conceding two goals to set pieces, 2-2. But that just shows you then the character of the boys second half. Went and won the game 4-2 in the end. So, yeah, brilliant.
Resilience, isn't it? That's what it's all about. We're big believers in resilience,
but
aren't
with
we,
the
Robert?
Grassroots football, like Tomo there, obviously he's the manager and I help out, just try and obviously give my perspective on the game and try and help the boys because it is under-15s football. It's a learning game for them. Yeah. And to give them as many minutes as they can and rotate it, it's great for the boys.
Yeah, love that.
Right, in that case then, let me ask one question from myself and then we'll get into all of the Instagram questions. On the back of that, in both of your opinions, what age is the right age for young players to go into an academy?
Oh, Robbo, you
I mean,
I
personally
on, I
believe
this.
That they shouldn't be too young. What's your thoughts, guys?
Love this.
I think you get the two types of players that are naturally built for academy football or they're not ready for it at all until the later stages, which I'm a big believer in the way it goes sometimes in the academy. You could be in there from the ages of 9, put it, but it's earlier, but from 9 all the way up to 16 and you get told you're not getting a contract. That's the most devastating news that you want to hear, that you've worked all of that. Or you go and carry on playing grassroots football with your mates, having fun. You get past the 16, 17 age, you're not told you're getting a contract, you're not getting a contract, but you're still having fun with your mates. But then you get later on in your career and you're playing at a level where you're now getting recognised and you're getting watched by scouts. And then you go into that environment. I find it's better because, one, you've played against proper men and you've developed at a young age to get beaten up by men and kicked around the pitch. And then you go into that environment where you're ready-made. Whereas in academies, are they ready-made for it?
That's a good point. But Ben, just on the flip side of that, just to play devil's advocate, if you're getting top-level coaching from the age of, let's say, 10 to 17, whereas, like Paul's just describing, are then those kind of Sunday league players at a disadvantage?
Yeah, without doubt. I still think the coaching can be good depending on the coaches and who's doing it. But I just think I prefer the latter model that you spoke about there, Robbo, where I think it makes you more of a rounded individual, more of a rounded footballer.
Robust,
more resilient. I towards the end of my career I saw some of the young players coming through and I just think they're a little bit too mollycoddled, a little bit too wrapped in cotton wool. Everything's kind of been handed on a plate to them. Again, you get the certain individuals, it's about their character, what they are as a person. You get the odd one that sticks out and you think, oh, he's got a real good chance he has because his mentality, his professionalism, the way he approaches it is done properly and it's in the right manner. But I do worry that in that academy system, I think if they are a real shining light and they're exposed to first team action or first team training early doors, that then leads with a new contract and being hyped up, and I do think that can be damaging. So I don't believe in putting kids in an academy from a young age whatsoever. My personal experience is I left school at 16. I was a chef for 2 years playing non-league football, but it afforded me that roundedness where I appreciated what it looked like to go out and work 40, 50 hour weeks in a kitchen, sweating, working
and
hard.
And probably less pressure, Ben, right?
Yeah, much less pressure. And then when I got the chance to play football, I think I appreciated it a lot more.
Right, nice. Okay, right, we're going to dive straight in. We've got one here, an interesting one. It's an anonymous one on Instagram. Is snus used a lot at the top level?
Oh.
Now, what snus is, it's little tobacco pouches, right? Little disposable.
It's not chewing tobacco, is it?
No.
No, because you don't chew it. You just leave it in your gum.
Yeah, so we're in America in the old days, you'd see people with chewing tobacco and they don't spit it into a spittoon.
Yeah.
This is little pouches of tobacco that people put on their gum and it gives them a hit. The tobacco, I believe, will go quickly into the bloodstream and give them that little buzz.
Now, I think Jamie Vardy's made it a bit more sort of famous, hasn't he? Because he's obviously somebody that uses it.
Right, so what's your experience of this, guys? Is it used a lot? And what are your thoughts?
It's used a lot.
It's used a lot.
And my thoughts on it are, it's your choice with what you want to do. But the worst thing for me is what I hate is I see it lying around everywhere. Just put it in the bin.
Yeah.
It's like any bit of rubbish. It's like, if you're going to do it and you're going to take it, just if you're going to replace it, then just put it in the bin. Don't leave it in the shower. Don't leave it in the corridor.
Even put it in your pocket and save it for later.
Because what you've got to remember is that other people that, like the other staff members that work in and around the offices, around training grounds, and they walk up and down and see that in the corridors, I just find it disrespectful. Just put it in the bin.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It's very common in football. Yeah. I mean, very, very common.
Like, you would see,
I would say
a high percentage of players use it.
40-50% of players, maybe. Maybe that much, do you think?
Maybe more.
Maybe more. Maybe more. It is a very it's obviously first came to prominence, I'd say probably 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a Scandinavian thing, isn't it? Yeah. I remember Jonas Olsen actually at West Brom was massive on it. Seb Larsen at Birmingham City, massive on it. It's kind of obviously it's a lot better for you than smoking. But what I think, I've never tried it, I hopefully never will, because I've never smoked or anything like that, but it kind of, it's just that sort of relief of, it just might calm you down
a little bit. It's nicotine, isn't it?
It
gives you a little buzz, a little bit of relaxation.
Yeah. I'd say it's kind of a lesser evil of smoking, basically.
I think when you look at modern day footballers, obviously they get tested all the time. Yeah. There's probably more pressure on them now ever to have really good lifestyle. You see like players like Marcus Rashford and lots of others that they do their own pre-season. Yeah. So they do a pre-season themselves, don't they? So I think it's probably just a small vice that a modern day player will have, which there's nothing too wrong with that, is there?
Maybe a little bit more research needs to go into it, maybe. But I'd say that
will come from the doctors, won't it? Or the medical department. That's then the issues when that's brought up. But as far as I'm aware, I don't think there's an issue with it.
It's probably, like I say, it's a lesser evil than turning to some of the harder alternatives, which could be smoking or alcohol. So I'd say that as long as it's not a problem or an addiction, I think it's okay.
It's okay.
Fair enough.
Very common, though.
Okay, we've got a question for Junior J50461. If you could have played under any manager in your career, guys, who would it have been? Ben, we'll start with you.
Listen to this, lads. You might have played under him, actually. Sam Allardyce.
No, I didn't.
Did you not?
No, he left Bolton before I went.
So I remember Sam Allardyce. Paul Robinson, when I first got into the England team, was the goalkeeper, and he was at Blackburn with him. And he used to say, he's the best manager in the world. For a goalkeeper, he's the best manager in the world. He is like, when you get the ball, you kick it as far as you possibly can away from your goal. Like, as far as you possibly can, yeah? He says, I would be taking free kicks from, like, the halfway line and sticking it onto the other goalkeeper. He said, and the manager used to just love it. He said, the amount of time, he said, saves didn't matter to him. He said, but if I would launch the ball and it would land on the crossbar of their goal, he said he would be giving me a ripple from
even
the side.
Even better, stick it on big Kevin Davis' head.
Oh, right. Murder.
Big Davo.
Big Samba coming up from centre-back and all that. Christopher Samba. That to me sounds like heaven. Tony Pulis weren't a million miles off that, to be fair. I used to love it. It was very, with Tony Pulis, same as probably a Sam Allardyce, it was black and white. I knew exactly what I had to do. Stop the ball going in the back of the net. And when I got the ball in my hands or at my feet, it was get it as far away from my goal as possible.
Right. And what about you, Robert?
I think now when you're looking at it, I'd love to have had that time under Pep, working under Pep or Jurgen, just with their mentality and what they expect and what they want from a player.
Do you think they would have made you a better player?
100%, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, just because of that demand, but that work rate. I love work rate. I just love that my whole that winning. I want to win, even though it's impossible to win all the games.
Yeah.
But it's just that philosophy of...
I think that's what's missing a little bit from modern football nowadays, is having players and wanting to do it for the team. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You want your team to win on a Saturday, don't you?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And you'll do whatever it takes so that your team wins.
Yeah, but when I was playing, I'd love to have probably experienced someone like an Arsene Wenger or Sir Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
They'd have been the two. So probably Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
With the culture change of what he did with Arsenal, that would have been good to work under that. So I'd have enjoyed, I reckon, working under Arsene.
I'd love to have seen a little Robbo mixing it up at Man City, left back, absolutely hard as nails, smashing people. But
into
then also
the midfield,
cultured, coming inside, playing 1-2s and down the wing. Love that.
Right, okay, I've got another one for you. Barto74, do football agents have the best interests of the players at heart, or are they just looking for an earner?
Oh, Robbo, answer this. As somebody who's been in a coaching setup, right, Robbo is primed to answer this because he understands the politics of what agents and players and how they work.
Okay, let's get into this one.
So for me, I had a really good agent because we had a working relationship. So he knew me, I knew him. So there was never any complications or anything. But there are agents out there that are hopeless. Honestly, they're hopeless. They do nothing for the players. They leave them in the lurch. When the time comes to the end of the contracts, they just move on. You're just treated like a piece of dirt. That's all it is. So that player now is left in, well, what else are you doing for me now? Like, where are you going to move me? Whereas they've got a new player on the scene that they see has got the potential, and they just move on to that because they're worried about
the potential to make them more money.
To make them more money. That's all it is.
Do you think, because you hear a lot about it, especially with these super agents and stuff, do you think that a high percentage of the time the agent's own agenda comes before the players.
Their own agenda comes in because the only way they make money is by moving that player.
Or re-signing a big deal?
Not as much.
Not as much, right.
Nowhere near as much. They will get a kickback and they will get paid when the player signs a new contract. But the big money comes when they sign for another football club, especially if that player can run his contract down. If a player runs his contract down and he can go on a free transfer and there's plenty of suitors, there's like three or four teams, that agent then is like, oh my gosh, I'm rubbing my hands here. It's like a bidding war. I can play him off against him, against them, off against them. And they can raise the price. And that agent, honestly, can ask for millions of pounds for himself. He will say to a lot of the ones will be honest with their player and say, right, you tell me the team you want to go to, basically. So if you've got four big teams after you, you tell me the team you want to go to. I will get the best contract out of that I could possibly can. But what I will do in the meantime is I will play them all off against each other and I will say to them, I want, as an agent acting on my player's behalf, for me to bring that player to your football club, I want 10 million quid.
But this is all based on the fact that you're talking elite level players.
Elite level.
If you're, I don't know, let's say a Mason Mount, a Declan Rice, a Jude Bellingham, someone like that, you're their agent. I personally don't believe it's the hardest job on earth, right? But, you know, working inside football, to agree.
It's connections. It's about having that network.
I think where the agents are really good or potentially can be really good is if that player maybe isn't in absolute high demand or maybe slowly, like slightly further down the pyramid. Is it fair to say they probably have more work to do?
It's a selection of player, isn't it? I find the best agents are the ones that have the smaller number of players, because then individually they get to know that player with a relationship, because that player after games will not want to go sometimes and phone like you say your partner or your family member. They might want an agent's view on what you thought of the game was if he was at the game watching it, and then you'd give that value opinion of what you thought. So say now for me, if I started up an agency, I would probably only want 10 players. So them 10 players I would have a close relationship with is that I'm getting to them game by game, but I'm also analysing their game, and I'm helping them.
You're offering them a real value package.
It's service as well.
My service would be, you would phone me if you're struggling, and I'd understand that, but I'd also be there, watch your games, and then I'll help you develop as a player as well, because I've played it, so I understand it, but I'd also relate to how you're feeling on the pitch.
Yeah, that's really important, isn't it? I mean, we've had Richard Lee, obviously, who's a former colleague of both of yours. So Rich obviously specialises in goalkeepers, but we know, speaking to Rich, that if you're with Rich, he is analysing the data. He knows the numbers. He knows every one of his players playing across Europe and the rest of the world. But also, he's played in the game as well. So if one of his keepers does want to ring him up, Rich is coming from it from a credibility point of view.
Yeah, for sure.
So based on that, does it help if you're an ex-player, do you think, Ben?
I would say so, yeah. I would say so. Because how crazy is it that a player would value the opinion of an agent that's never played football and take that opinion on how he played as sort of gospel almost? You know what I mean? The people who you should listen to after a game are your coaches. Yeah, you know for yourself first and foremost, don't you? You know if you've had a good game, you know what you've done well, and you know what you've done wrong. But the only real people is if you're a goalie, it's your goalie coach. If you're an outfield player, it's your manager. It's the coaches. You listen to their opinion. Yeah. Whereas nowadays, a lot of players are just they kind of hide behind this agent, and they'll use him to shield everything out. Whereas I think if you're a former player as an agent like yourself, if you were to do that, Robbo, I know you'd be coming at it from a very honest, not trying to make money point of view. You're telling the player if he's had a bad game. You're telling the player what he can do better. You're telling him what he's done well, first and foremost. And then you're listening to his needs, what he wants as a player. If he wants to stay there, if he wants to move to another club, does he understand what that entails? Does he know that he's going to have to uproot, find a new house, move his family there, new kids, new schools, new everything, all that kind of stuff? So I think a lot of agents just don't even worry or think or give a second thought to that side of it. They just see the money.
It's a balance though, right? So you look at a couple of examples. So I think there's more and more players now are getting kind of maybe family to represent them. I think Declan Rice, maybe Mason Mount, I'm not sure exactly. Maybe that's just on the commercial side. But you've got the trust, but then secondly, you kind of think, are they getting the best deal they can? So it is a bit of a double-edged sword. And then you look at a Jesse Lingard of the world, and at the moment, you would probably say, from everything we know that's been out there publicly, maybe the representation hasn't
been. He's just got rid of them all, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But again, Jesse, now it's taken him that long to understand what good people it is to have around him. And he's finally taken that, he's bit the bullet and gone, I need to get rid of you. You're not helping me. And I just want to be playing football. And I think the Paul Scholes comments made him realise a little bit on his posts by going, Jesse, look, everyone just wants you to be playing football because we know what a good footballer you are. But your Instagram and everything like that, it's you're just promoting stuff that you don't need to be promoting.
Yeah.
Just keep your head low, get back in football and do what everyone knows what you're good at is being a good footballer. And that's what he needs now.
Yeah,
good people around him.
It is, yeah.
He needs good people around him.
And I think probably even the common fan like myself would say that it was quite glaringly obvious that when he had that brilliant loan at West Ham, sign at West Ham. It was he was happy, he was scoring, the money would have been good. Do you think that was one of those moments where he should have just signed for West Ham?
Yeah, do you know what? It's a really, like the Jesse Lingard story is actually really interesting. There's so many, many factors at play from it. So the West Ham, it all went so well for him. It was brilliant. And it's good to see Jesse Lingard in that shape and that position and that place where he's playing football with a smile on his face and he's doing well. He's scoring goals, making assists. West Ham are doing well. Everybody is benefiting from it, aren't they? But he's got something to play for there. Do you know what I mean? Mm. When he's at West Ham and he's on loan, he's got something to play for. He's playing for a new contract. He's playing for his position, his starting place. When he goes and signs a bigger deal, a longer deal, or it's almost like, again, it's that mentality. It's that you take the foot off the pedal and you will subconsciously relax and you won't be as effective. You won't quite put your foot in. You won't put your head in. You won't really risk it. And I think that's what he's got stuck in, is the money that was on offer was so big, it kind of took his desire away a little bit. But, you know, I'd say that he's probably taken some positive steps in the last week or so to, like I say, get rid of his former agents and just put it out there that he wants to start playing football again. I'd say all the posts from Dubai where it's nice and warm is not necessarily the best thing or the best look, because there'll be football clubs out there looking at it going, I don't know if he's got the appetite. He just wants to be somewhere nice and warm. I want to see him in the nitty gritty. I want to see him on the park pitches and putting the hard yards in and playing football.
Yeah.
That would be a good look.
And my advice to Jesse is, and I've gone through this as well, is that I put myself out for trials when I didn't have a club.
Yeah.
And I think Jesse needs to do that now. I think he needs to go and prove his worth. And that would be the hardest thing for him to do, is to bite that. But you've got.
Is that an ego thing? Is it?
It might be where he's feeling. I've probably let myself go too far now down that route where I just want a club. I just want a contract. But at times you've got to go and prove that. You've got to go and prove your fitness. You've got to go and prove what a good player you are still. So go into a club, come back home, come back to England. Say, look, can I come in and train in? Have a look at me. Yeah. What your thoughts are. And do it that way. And that's my only advice I'd give to him now. And if he's got my number, Jesse, then give me a call and I'll try and help you out as much as you can.
I think that's fantastic advice. That.
As players, when you do, like a Jesse has, and other players will be in the same position, is when you get to that stumbling point of your career now, and with Jesse, it has been about the money, and the people that have taken advantage of him have been about the money and not about him and his career and his future. Now for him, it's just, right, I just need to get myself back on track. Come home, phone clubs, go and let them have a look at you, let them see what shape you're in, play a couple of 21s games to get yourself fit, and then the clubs now are seeing that you're hungry, you want to prove a point, all right, we'll sign you on a short-term deal, but now you've got to prove yourself.
Look at Ross Barkley, he's probably a good example.
And Ross Townsend.
Yeah. And Ross Townsend.
Exactly the same thing.
But it's horrible to say as a footballer, because they'll be thinking, well, no, I deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's humbling, isn't it?
It's humbling. Well,
it's really humbling.
He got back in the England squad. I think he's 31, Jesse.
Yeah.
And he's a top player.
You'd
when
like
he's bang
to think
on
he's
it.
Got four
he's
or five years left. Four or
he's
five
still
years
got plenty
left.
Of time ahead of him. But like now, I think the great thing about it is he's got rid of them people that were around him that were not doing any good by him. And now for him now, it's right, just get back on track. This is what I need to do in my head. This is how I'm going to do it. If it works, it works. But the teams will give him an opportunity because we all know that there's quality there and he just needs to be given a chance.
It's such a good look as well. Like I say, it's fantastic advice, because if he goes and rings a Premier League football club and says, would you accept me to just come in and on trial? And you turn up on time with everything you need and you're professional and you do a job and everybody can see your ability, that football club straight away goes, you know what? Fair play. Fair play. I'll have that all day long.
But here's a question for you then, Ben. Someone like Jesse Lingard, what would he cost a club?
Obviously, it's free transfer. So
as in, if they had to go and buy someone of Jesse Lingard's quality,
you don't quite know what you're going to get. That's the whole point of going out on trial. Is when you're 7 months without a football club like Jesse is, you don't quite know what you're going to get. So nobody is going to go straight away. I'm going to give you even 20 grand a week, 30 grand a week. They're not going to do that. Yeah, 20 grand a week is £1 million a year. Yeah, no football club is going to do that on somebody that's been out of the game for 7 months. So the going on trial bit is the big bit. Show that you're fit. Show that you're hungry, show that you're professional and you want to do a job, and then show your football skills when you get on the football pitch. That's the bit that you have to do to make a football club go, right, I will now commit a contract offer for you. But like I say, there's no transfer fee. There's not a lot to lose. Yeah, you just take him on trial, see what you got, and then go from there.
Fantastic. Love it. Right, okay, next question. Dino, 1585, Paul Robinson. What was the emotions like in the Great Escape year? So firstly, tell us what the Great Escape was, when it was, and all about the emotions.
The Great Escape now was, what was that, 2005, 2006 season? I mean, the emotions of just the roller coaster of being down, the depression of, like, you could get relegated, you could lose people's jobs behind the scenes.
So this was
good
at
people.
West,
this is at West Brom.
This is at West Brom. Yeah. And this was, am I right in saying, they were the only team ever to be, at the time,
bottom of Christmas. First team ever to survive, to stay up. But then I obviously had the same at Birmingham when we did it on the last day at Bolton.
Yeah.
So I've had it two times.
Who was the guy that scored? Who was it?
Paul Caddis.
Oh, scored the equaliser. Yeah, I remember
that. In the 95th minute. But yeah, I mean, the emotions of it, it's hard to explain it unless you're in it. It's crying, laughing.
Never
wanting to be in them positions again.
Do you know when you're losing week in, week out, and like I say, the whole atmosphere around the football club is bad and it's negative?
Yeah.
Does that affect your whole life?
The negativity does, because that's the biggest part of football, is the negativity around it. It affects everybody.
Yeah.
So everybody involved in that football club, it affects you all.
Does it linger down the line though as well? So does that affect you, which in turn will affect your, maybe your wife, your kids, your family members? Does it trickle that far down the line?
I wouldn't say you try and keep it away from your family as much as you can, because obviously it's your working environment. It's more of the good people that work behind the scenes, the ones that you know that could possibly lose their jobs, or they got to take a wage, like deferral.
The dinner ladies, the coaches, physios,
like
maybe
the groundsmen have got to take cutbacks on like equipment that they need for the football pitches.
Yeah.
They're important things. So that pressure, that intensity, but like you say, when it happens, it's you're elated, aren't you?
Yeah,
you're celebrating to the max, you're overjoyed, you're cuddling each other, you're crying, it's like, and then, but you just don't ever want to do that again. It's different to winning a title, to what you've done. Is the difference in emotions with it is that you've earned that, you deserved it. It's like sometimes you think, we didn't deserve to stay up, but we did. But another team suffered because they've ended up losing money now on getting relegated, and people at that club have ended up losing their money. So, yeah, it's just, it's an emotional game. It is, but it's also a pressurised game in the people that you're doing it for behind the scenes that don't get the recognition that they deserve.
This is West Brom in the kind of the boing boing years, basically, is where they get that sort of name of up and down, up and down, up and down.
A yo-yo team.
They get promoted, they get relegated. And it's Kieran Richardson on the last day of the season. Did he score two, did he?
Kieran scored the second. Jeff Horsfield scored the first. Come off the bench.
Yeah, nice. Yeah,
so beat Portsmouth 2-0. And then the other game was Charlton... can't think who Charlton were playing. Fulham were playing Norwich, but Fulham absolutely spanked him about 7-0, I think, that one. But yeah, they drew 2-2 and they needed to win. So we ended up staying up.
Oh, that's
fantastic.
Good.
Right, I've got a question for you, Ben, from Lee.Mason. Who was the forward that had the most shithousery? The guy that just yapped in your ear or was a pain in the arse all game?
He wouldn't necessarily yap in your ear, but Luis Suarez at Liverpool was just disgusting to play against. He was horrible
as a goalie.
As a goalie, as a defender, you would have not enjoyed it at all either, because he was one of those sort of players who would pinch you secretly. He would punch you if he could, little sneaky punches. He would, if he could, leave one on you after the ball had gone.
Okay.
He would leave one on you. I remember him doing one to Jonas Olsen. I might have told it on the Fozcast before. We're playing away at Anfield and Jonas has slid in to clear the ball from him, and I've just watched Luis Suarez just happily run his back two studs, the big studs, the long studs, yeah? The long studs. Run them happily down Jonas Olsen's thigh. And Jonas is still sliding, and I'm watching Luis Suarez, not watching the ball, not watching anything, but his studs, and Jonas's thigh and happily watching him just run it down it. And I thought, oh, you're horrible. And I remember saying to him, like, don't do that. You don't need to do that. But he's the sort of player I want on my team.
I wouldn't want to do that to Jonas. He's an absolute giant.
He's an animal. He's an animal. But that was Luis Suarez for you. But I want him on my team. I want that guy who is going to do win at all costs, and he wants the team to win. It's as simple as that. Yeah. All right, he wants the team to win.
Robbo, what about you then? So a different, slightly different question. Have you had any players over your career that are particularly vocal, that might be on at you all game, or random, like, oh, what are you doing tonight, mate? Like, to put you off. Have you got any vocal players that spring to mind?
Vocally, you'd probably say Roy Keane. When you played against him, he was always someone that he'd just try and intimidate the team. Not just you as an individual, but in the tunnel. He'd be going, like, the words are, you're not up for it. Look at these lot today, crumbling in their boots.
He'd say that loud.
Like, little, really? Yeah, like, just walking down the corridor. So, just wouldn't give a care, because he was Man United captain. So, he was their leader. Everyone looked up to him, and he did. He intimidated people. He intimidated individuals. He intimidated the team. And that's just the way he was. But what a career he had doing it.
Do you think, like, there's an element of, it's before the game, like, oh, come on, Roy, wait till we get on the pitch, or is it the game is the game?
That's where you would win the game. You'd win the game in the tunnel before going out. If you had players like Roy Keane, that's where they'd win the game, because they'd stand there, like, shoulders high, rolled back, going, these lot don't fancy it. And you'd look at them and you go, oh, my God, Man United today, look at them. Jesus, Roy Keane.
If you've got a couple of kids
already
in your team, right, and Man United walk out and you've got Roy Keane there, and then you've got Sir Alex Ferguson walking out after them, right? That like you say, that game is won.
And he's got Vidic behind him.
Yeah, Vidic, that game is won.
And you're turning around, you've got them players. Like, even Vieira, when you're looking at Vieira, you're looking, you've got your likes of Tony Adams and all that standing there, and you're going, maybe, by the way, lads. Yeah.
Is this something that is just built into players, or are there people, coaches like you at football clubs, Robbo, and Ben, is it something that you've spoke to players about that go, let's teach these young players these behaviours?
Body language.
Is this taught? Yeah, you try and teach the boys against the, like, even the grassroots teams, about that some teams will turn up and they're all, look at them, they think they've won the game already. That should inspire you today, boys. Look, go out and enjoy your football. Play with a smile on your face, but look at the way they've turned up there. They think they've won the game already. So go and show them what you're all about. And it's just that, the little motivational talks, but then you see it, the boys really get into it and they enjoy it. It's just part and parcel of football.
Yeah,
it's that banter, isn't it?
It goes into every aspect and every
walk
facet
of life.
Of everything. Yeah. It is. It's body language, mate. If you see a team that you can see are up for it and they're raring and roaring and they just look like their hackles are up on their back, you do. It gets inside you and you think, it's going to be a tough day today. And subconsciously, that will affect you. It's as simple as that.
Yep. No, I like it. Right, I've got a quick one for you, Ben, if you could give a quick one here. Davies 10, Wrexham fan, looks like. Who has the better throw-in, Rory Delap or Ben Tozer?
Oh, I love your toes, but Rory Delap's was phenomenal. Rory Delap's would go to the back post. It would go to the back post.
On a cold Tuesday night.
On a cold Tuesday night.
I'm going to chuck a curveball out there as well.
Come on.
Dave Challoner.
Oh, he was the OG.
He was the OG. He used to run down the tunnel.
Was it Tranmere?
Yeah.
Tranmere.
He used to run down the tunnel and then onto the pitch to throw it. Straight into your box.
He got a 20-metre run-up just to launch a ball in there. He was the OG,
Rory was ridiculous.
He was scary, mate. He was...
Dave Challoner, mate.
Dave Challoner. He was the one who set the standard, and then other people fell in line.
The trailblazer. Right, here's one for you both. The best derby game you've ever played in. Not individual, but the biggest derby game matchup that you've been involved with, Robbo?
West Brom Wolves.
Yeah.
Or Watford Luton. Watford Luton surprised people. Yeah. That one's fiery.
It is a fiery one.
But the West Brom Wolves one, yeah, is lively.
I know it's very regional with football, right? Okay, I'm a Wolves fan. It's very regional. People do not understand the Black Country Derby.
Massive.
If Wolves beat
Brentford in the FA Cup, there's a Black Country Derby. Yeah, there's
the
a Black
FA
Country
Cup,
Derby, West Brom v Wolves, which will be a spicy affair, because when it comes to a derby, all bets are off. Yeah. The atmosphere takes over, the emotion takes over. Yeah. I was thinking about this a few weeks ago, I played in some proper derbies. I played in Villa Birmingham, West Brom Wolves, I played in Wrexham, Chester,
Luton, Watford,
Man United, Liverpool. I don't think I did play Liverpool for Man United.
Did you not?
No. But I will still say West Brom Wolves. West Brom Wolves. The best one I ever played in, actually, was away at Wolves at Molineux, and we beat them 5-1. It's not like I like to talk about it much.
You might have put a tweet out at the time.
And Wolves fans already hate me anyway, but that was... I remember that game. We absolutely battered Wolves away. Peter Rodden Wingy on fire. Jonas Olsen scored one. Keith Andrews. Mick McCarthy was the manager at the time, got sacked. And I remember sitting on the coach after the game and... Cool, the atmosphere around that modern new stadium was disgusting, honestly.
So that was 5-1.
Yeah.
And then Wolves fans got their own back.
They did get their own
when
back.
When Wolves beat Watford.
Oh, it was 4.
This
I
was
think.
Personally with you,
oh,
isn't it?
It was 4. It was a horrible experience. It was at Molineux, and the Wolves fans from the very get go were on my back more than I've ever seen it anywhere. Robbo. Honestly, ever. Those Wolves fans, when they get going, ferocious they were, and it proper got in my head. I mean, proper got in my head. Fully affected my performance that day as well. Properly got in my head. So fair play, Wolves. You got your payback. You got your own back on that one.
On the Wolves. Right. Okay. Quick question. Quick fire one. Who's winning the Euros this summer? Robbo.
Oh, gosh. I want to say England.
I'm going England.
I've gone to stick with my country, yeah, because we've got a great group of players.
It'll be France, won't it? Come on, don't be silly. It'll be France. I'm an England fan. I want England to win, and we've got a very good chance. But we are built as England fans to do really well and just fall short. That's what it is.
I never
country.
Had you down as a negative
I'm
Nelly.
I'm not
going.
A negative Nelly, but it's just been so... I can only learn from my past experiences. My past experiences tell me that we will just fall short.
Yeah, France, you've got a fairly... good reason yes, history, exactly. haven't they? Right, okay. Tom D 116. What are the weirdest pre-match rituals you have seen before a game, boys?
Oh,
I've seen someone have a hot bath. 15 minutes, line a hot bath. Yeah, just get in the bath. Just for a game.
Can you say it?
No, I'm not going to say it.
This would have been at West Brom because you got baths at West Brom.
Yeah, no, it was at Bolton. Yeah, it was at Bolton.
I've never seen anybody hot ever. Bath. If somebody had a hot bath 15 minutes before kickoff, after the warm up.
No, before the warm up.
Oh my!
So literally,
gosh.
Get there, name the team, straight in the bath.
Nah, that's not done.
Yeah, straight in the bath.
That's not done.
Fozzie, have you got any? Seen any?
I remember at Watford, Kike Femenya, a very religious person. He would bring a little travel bag of all kind of religious stuff. So we would have pictures of his family. He'd have loads of different crosses and stuff, and he would lay it all out on his peg.
Okay,
like
nice.
Before the game, basically. And I think he would do a little prayer or something like that. But it was a proper little kit he took with him. To be fair, but it's just what he needed to get ready for the game. And he was a very good player, to be fair. So it must have worked for him.
Okay, question for Fozzie here. I could answer this for you. If you weren't a goalkeeper, what position would you be? He wouldn't, I don't think.
No, God no.
let's say that your outfield ability matched your goalkeeping ability.
Yeah.
Where would you like to play?
I would have liked to have been a defender. I would have liked to have been a centre back. I think because I like to get stuck in as well. I'd like to be. I would be a bit like you, Robbo, where I would relish the physical battle every day. It would be, don't get me wrong, the tactics are brilliant and all that, but I would relish every day. It would be an opportunity to better my opposition. Whoever that attacker was that day, it would be, I want to get the better of him.
I've seen you get stuck in. Are we allowed to say that? Have we said that before about Cov Connection?
No, probably not, but it's fine. Cov Connection, by the way, is a local kind of like six-a-side
in Coventry.
In Coventry. And we used to play as kids, didn't we? It would be like it was four-a-side or five-a-side.
Four-a-side. So when you were at Stoke, a young professional at Stoke, Ben was our ringer. So he'd come and play. He'd go in goal.
No, sometimes. I'd play outfield
as well. You'd get bored.
Yeah.
You'd get bored.
Rush goalie.
Spider.
And I remember the one time we played a local Coventry team. And it's in Coventry. It's a spicy, spicy league. And I remember this one time we were playing this team that are particularly like volatile. Yeah. Right? And you are flying into tackles.
It's lovely, mate. It's lovely. But it's same as you. When you're on that pitch, it's... They're trying to hurt me, so I will try and hurt them. And it's just the way that it goes. It's a mutual... Hurt off.
And who hurt who that day?
Well, nobody actually hurt me because I did it to myself. But I did actually, that was the day when I did my cruise ship when I was 19 years old. it was off season. We were playing and nobody was near me. I think I've passed the ball to somebody, turned to run, and my knees just popped. Honestly, out of absolutely nowhere as well, wouldn't it? I just found a pop in my knee. I was like, that's not right. My knee just blew up.
You just ran out the net.
Swallowed up like crazy, and that was it.
Terry, your dad gave you a bollocking, and then on Sky Sports it said young goalkeeper has done his cruise ship playing tennis with his brother.
We had to spin a lie and say we did it playing tennis.
There you go. Right, okay. Next question. This is a good one for you both. We'll start with you, Paul. What impact does it have on the players when the manager of your club is changed very frequently?
It can be obviously not ideal. The stability, your player, working under different managers, different philosophies, different formations all the time. It doesn't help. So as a player, though, all you can do is do what's best for you, and that's to play the position that you play and do as well as you can and make the manager's decision hard to sort of take you out of the team. But yeah, it can be very disruptive, no stability and obviously not really much identity within the club if they're going to keep doing that.
Right, okay. This has come from one of our mates, Scotty Powell, young man. On the back of that question, Ben, do the players, looking when you were at Watford, for example, there was obviously a big churn of manager, does it get to a point where the players are standing there going, fuck's sake, we've just had a new manager, he wants to play a different formation, what chance have we got? Do you start questioning?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's, especially at Watford, you got so used to it happening that you just knew it was inevitable, basically, which in turn is a bad place to be, because you knew that manager, if he got off to a bad start, would be under pressure straight away, and then it would alter the dynamics of how the football club would work. But as soon as a new manager is coming in and you're looking at the rumour mill, you're looking at the betting odds, all that kind of stuff, you start trying to find out what that new manager is about. So as soon as you know there's a guy that's a favourite for it, you might look at some of the other players and say, oh, you played with him, what's he like? And then you would find out, you'd get a sort of a gauge of what that guy's about. And most of the time, all you want to know is he a good guy? And what day off does he give you?
Right.
Does he give you Sunday, Wednesday?
The first two questions.
And is he going to give me the fair opportunity that I deserve as a player?
Yeah.
That's okay. What you look at.
Right, we're going to do a couple more. Obviously, the good thing about this is we can give contact. You guys can give
context. Can we do a part two to this, by the way? Because I feel like there are about 7 billion more questions that we could unearth and actually try and explain away a bit more as well.
Yeah, sure, for sure. Right, last couple of questions. Lads, what was your go-to pre-match meal, Paul?
I was quite boring, actually. I used to just have cereal, a bit of toast with peanut butter on it. That was my pre-match. Yeah, I never wanted to feel too heavy going into a game. After the game, I'd then fill myself up.
Was that something was that always your pre-match?
Always. Maybe when I was younger, I used to have a bit of spaghetti bolognese with the sauce and that on it, but then the sauce become for me a little bit too acidy when I was playing. So when you were running around, you could then feel it. Like when you burped, you could feel the sauce.
Yeah. Okay.
So I didn't want that feeling while I was playing. So I just felt, right, I'm going to go on to a little bit of cereal now with a bit of milk and then some toast. And then, yeah, I just felt right as rain doing that.
It's funny, outfield players, like, it's a genuine concern. They have to be really mindful of what they're going to take for pre-match meal. Pre-match meal is typically 3 hours before, isn't it? So if it's 3 o'clock kickoff, you're all sitting down at 12 o'clock to have your pre-match meal. Again, for outfield players, they genuinely have to use it as fuel to get through the game. Goalkeepers, it's not about that for us. We can genuinely just eat what we want. So I would change every week. It didn't really matter to me. One of my favourites towards the end would be, you'd always have chicken breasts, and I'd just make like a chicken sandwich. I'd put a bit of like cheese on it, a bit of tomato ketchup, butter my bread, and it would be basically a chicken and cheese sandwich, and it'd be beautiful because the chicken was warm as well. But for goalies, we can eat or drink whatever we wanted, basically.
Fair play. Right, okay, last question. Which team has the kind of biggest fortress? So, you know, when you hear people referring to it as it's a fortress, so Old Trafford back in the day. So over your careers, what team did you feel like you were going to a fortress? And that question's from Routledge.
I would probably say Anfield.
Yeah, that's just first because, one that
just,
pops in,
just
yeah.
because of the actual historic meaning to the club itself, with you walk down the tunnel, you touch the badge, you go out, you like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As soon as they
Goosebumps.
Sing, flip me, it's like you want to join in singing the song, don't you?
I think I did a few times.
you do, don't you?
Yeah, I think I did a few times.
You never walk alone and all
yeah,
that.
I know.
You're muttering it to yourself, going, what are you doing? Don't get caught
looking
on camera.
Looking around at 50,000 people whilst you're muttering
Do you touch that? So the when you're saying about the tunnel, there's a, this is Anfield, is it?
Yeah. This is Anfield,
sign.
Yeah.
And a lot of the home players touch it.
Do the away players
touch it?
I think some did. Just out of respect.
Yeah?
Because it's just a great ground to go and play at.
Fozzy?
Yeah, Liverpool was the first one that popped in my head. I would have said Anfield. To be fair, there's a few. Newcastle is always incredible. I think it's that wow factor when you walk out the tunnel and you look around and it just seems so ginormous and filled with fans. So Liverpool gives you that. Newcastle, without doubt. Everton used to really kind of
intimidating as well, because they're on top of you.
Highbury
was another one as well.
Yeah,
the old Highbury.
Yeah. Even White Hart Lane, the old White Hart Lane, when Spurs were in their pomp with Harry Kane and Dele Alli and all them boys, when they were going through a really good spell.
Oh, we're forgetting West Ham, mate.
Oh, mate. Come on. Upton old school Park. West Ham. Upton Park.
Oh, well, that's got to be one of the most intimidating places as well.
That was a really tough place. Disgusting.
Just because their fans are lively.
Yeah.
But the atmosphere, what a place to go and play football.
Well, as somebody who worked on the Millwall coaching staff, what's it like playing at the Den?
Yeah, the new Den is obviously a little bit different to the old Den.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, like you say, the fans, with the way the game's changed now, they're not probably as bad as what they were. It's more of the younger generation that now go to the games there. So
the old guard have gone, so it's not as volatile.
Not as volatile. Obviously, you're still going to get the odd word flying your way. But that was... That's the norm, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't say it's as intimidating as what it has been over the years, Millwall.
Oh, okay. I think as a fan, Liverpool is Anfield.
Yeah,
I remember going there, and like when it doesn't matter who you support, but when that song goes before the game, you know, you'll never walk alone. It is goosebumps. I've got one more question for you. This is one of my own. So you can go to any derby match in the world as a football fan. What game are you going to? I'll throw mine in quickly, and it's not too far away. I'm going to Rangers Celtic.
Oh, yeah.
That's one that's always thought. But I'd like to go to one abroad, like a Real Madrid Barcelona.
Yeah, that would be nice,
El Clasico. Yeah. Or, who is it? Boca Juniors.
River Plate.
Yeah. That's one that's obviously, I'm pushing danger line there. What's going on that with my security and safety of it. But it's just, you know, when you just want to go into a ground where you feel like intimidation of both sets of supporters and that rivalry and that fieriness.
Hatred.
Hatred on the pitch as well for the players, the way that they stare at each other and go, come on then, let's have it.
That's one.
River Plate and
Boca. I think I've been swayed by that. I was going to say something like a Red Star Belgrade, Partizan Belgrade. You know it's going to be trouble. You know there's going to be flares. It's going to be fiery. But I would genuinely be scared for my safety. I think the River Plate Boca Juniors. I'm still probably too scared to go to it. I won't lie to you, but I think that would be the one.
I think there's a scarier one for perception. Galatasaray Fenerbahce.
Oh golly! Can you imagine Graham Souness? Yeah, carrying out a flag and sticking it in the centre circle at that derby, like.
We've got some cojones.
What about the Milan derby?
Oh, AC Inter. I'd be a bit worried about that. I'd be a bit worried about my safety there. Yeah, I would. Yeah. I genuinely would.
That's also, again, it's up there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right up there.
Are we going to have a Fozcast away day, guys?
Yeah, without doubt. Let's do that.
Let's do it one time this year.
We'll make a little match day vlog or something, yeah?
Boom. Perfect. I think we're done.
Can I get invited to that one?
Yeah, absolutely. You're part of the Fozcast team.
Absolutely.
We're going to do a part two as well. Don't forget, everybody. And... Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Paul Robinson, you've been incredible.
Thank you, Paul. You've already done
a football fill-in today. That was world class. And the Fozcast, you backed it up. Back-to-back successes for you. So thank you very much. In the meantime, up the Fozcast. We will see you soon.
Up the Fozcast. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Fozcast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Fozcast.